south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. I get a lot of emails from ladies wondering about the sometimes more than annoying critter situation down here. Sure, up north you have your share of wild animals too, and some small pests like deer ticks that are quite dangerous. However, it's pretty easy to avoid them. And of course, I mentioned on a previous show or two that since there's no weather stripping, even in the highest first-class houses down here, certain unwanted critters will get into your house. And because native Latins are sort of living in a tamed jungle, well, compared to us expats and gringos, Latins are much more tolerant of all types of critters inside and outside. And of course, all the critters down here are bigger, tougher, and bolder than the ones you'll find up in the States. And what I mean by tougher is some of these pests are hard to kill, which is why most times it's better just to shoo them out of the house if you can. And as for me, and I think for most long-term expats, you get used to seeing more critters and creatures than you ever did up in the States. Now, as for me, I'm no longer in a mad rush to kill every creature that gets in the house. Even bees, wasps, spiders, and flying and crawling things you've only seen on Nat Geo. Nope, I usually won't kill them. But I am a fly and mosquito mass murderer. And proud of it. So anyway, other than flies, ants, mosquitoes, and slimy things, you know, the usual disgusting bugs you want to exterminate. By the way, that includes spiders. When I spot any other insect intruder, I'll boot them out of the house. And of course, the cleaning lady does too. Because if you don't, they'll build a nest or set up shop in some hidden space inside your house, and you don't want that. In fact, not so long ago, a queen bee set up shop inside expat Eddie's exhaust fan in his kitchen. So how'd that happen? Well, when the fan's off, there's a flapper on the outside wall that's supposed to lay flat against the building. But they don't always seal tight now, do they? And for a bee or wasp, that little crack, that little opening is a great place to set up shop. So, needless to say, when Eddie came home from a two-week vacation, he had a couple of hundred bees and a couple of pounds of honey inside his brand new stainless steel exhaust fan hood. The cleanup on that was not pretty. Now, years ago, when I first came to Latin America, I had a very different first-world style attitude towards all things creepy, crawly, slimy, and, well, disgusting. When I saw bees, wasps, ants' nests on the property, I'd consider them foreign invaders, wipe them out, or have my maintenance guy wipe them out for me. Especially those football-sized wasp nests. Those things give me the willies. And after my maintenance guy told me, I think it was his uncle, got stung to death after inadvertently slicing through one of those things. Now, when I see one, I keep my distance. In fact, that was the reason I quit going to a particular cafe internet many years ago. There was a big football-sized wasp nest right above the door, and no one did a thing about it. Must have been some kind of truce. It sure worked as a gringo repellent, I'll tell you that. Now, I don't want you to think if you live down here, there will be all kinds of massive insect invasions. That won't happen. But if you have any kind of garden or even a big yard or a lot, you'll realize if you have any sense that you're the real invader and this is their home. Yep, the birds, the bees, and the other critters have dibs. They got here first. So anyway, you can try to cull them back, and we all do, but it's a never-ending battle. Thankfully, it's a never-ending battle between them and your maintenance guy, not you. However, you should know this. Latin males, as a rule, have absolutely no fear of nature. I mean, look at those guys out there hacking away with machetes when everybody's got a story of snake bite or being bitten or stung by this or that. In fact, one Nicaraguan plasterer told me he was chopping a lot one day. He came across a couple of big old dead logs, which happened to be a home to a family of ocelots. And the mother, who didn't like him around her babies, attacked him and bit him a few times. By the way, ocelots are wild cats that can weigh up to 40 pounds. However, I hear they make good pets. Surely they're endangered and all that. And you most probably can't get one up in the States. But down here, well, anything goes. And people make pets out of all kinds of wild creatures. Which actually is pretty sad because most Latins don't know how to take care of their animals. Now, you longtime listeners probably remember the story I told about a Latin guy who had a jaguar for a pet. Same story, different circumstances. This time, The mother was killed when some guys were clearing a field with machines and machetes, and he rescued one of the babies, and now it's his pet. In fact, many times I was sitting in this guy's house, having coffee in his living room, and I didn't even know there was a 50-pound jaguar staring down at me from on top of a bookshelf or a door jamb. He'd sit there so still you'd never know he was there until his eyes moved and caught a glint of the sun. I never quite felt comfortable in that house. Would you? However, to the owner's credit, I have to say he's one of the only Latins I've ever met that really did take good care of his pet. Now, that said, after you've been down here a while, you can't help but get over some of the uneasiness you may have felt when first confronted with all those critters. Because they will get in your house, you know. So how about my experience with that stuff? Now, ladies, I don't want to scare you, but I'll give you a partial list here of the various unwanted creatures that have made it into my living quarters that I had to remove somehow. Now, of course, I've had the usual suspects, unwanted pests in the house, the same ones you probably had up in Cleveland and Seattle. You know, mosquitoes, ants, spiders, flies, cucarachas, various exes. Besides that stuff, see if you can match this. I've also had in my various Latin houses, frogs, toads, salamanders, snakes, I've had bats, and more than once I've had scorpions. However, don't let that scare you. They've always been small, no more than 2 or 3 inches. The plain vanilla variety, none of those big, ugly, glistening James Bond or Sahara Desert torture chamber Hollywood scorpions. Nope, there's none of those foot-long, alien-looking National Geographic jobs down here, unless, of course, you live in the Mexican desert. I've been around and I've never seen one of those except on TV and in a zoo. And that's a good thing. In fact, a very good thing. But what else? Oh, yeah. In my house, I've had snakes, and those two always babies, no more than a foot long. Oh, and I've even had a possum snuck in through the dog door. Of course, we all know what a dog or cat door is, but Latins have no concept. Yep, and they're available at high-end pet shops and Ace Hardware and stuff, but it's purely a gringo thing. So what else? Oh, yeah, I've had hummingbirds in the house, various other kinds of birds, walking sticks. Boy, there are walking sticks down here, and big ones, too. And at the beach house, I've had crabs. I'm talking about sea crabs. Oh, and by the way, speaking of sea crabs, you'll find they like closed, dark spaces like under your beds at the beach house. So guard your privates because they will pinch you. Now, I don't want to make it sound like you have to be on the lookout for animal invaders all the time. It's not like Jurassic Park, though they did film a few of them down here. I'd say most gringos and expats are lucky if they have one or, at the most, 2 animal incidents like that per year. Of course, you'll have more if you're at the beach because it's hot and the animals want to get some shade. And also during the rainy season. Wouldn't you want to get inside too? Anyway, as I mentioned before, the average Latin guy has no fear of nature. I guess that comes from being able to handle a machete at the age of 4 or 5. However, Latin ladies seem to have that natural female fear of creepy, crawly stuff and things that go bump in the night. That seems to be universal. So yes, I've seen maids and cleaning ladies freak out, but they recover quickly, go on the attack, and need no assistance. Let's just say I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that broom or fly swatter. Oh, and one thing. Remember, the insects are jumbo-sized down here, so when you whack one and kill one, you have to do the cleanup right away. Because if you don't, what's left will be stuck to your windows or doors like 5-minute epoxy. Nope, it's not pretty. On that note, you might want to have your maintenance guy or cleaning lady check your doors every 6 months or so because often insects will try to get in and you'll close your door, and unbeknownst to you, but certainly beknownst to the now smushed insect, he's now become part of the inner door jamb as an organic, tarry kind of epoxy. Talk about a nasty look. Which reminds me of another animal incident that happened just a couple of days ago. You dog owners out there know that when you drive up to your house, your dogs can usually tell you're coming from a couple blocks away. They recognize the sound of your car engine, which is why even if you're a block or so away, they'll start barking. However, this time, no barking. I'm thinking, that's unusual. Wonder what they're up to. Now, those of you who've had pets like that know the feeling when your dogs, cats, ferrets, pythons, whatever, don't greet you at the door, which is their regular routine. Something's up and it ain't good. Best case, they've gotten into the garbage. Worst case, they've escaped or they just don't love you anymore. So anyway, I pulled into the garage and there they were. But they weren't moving. They'd cornered something by the back door. Now, the last time that happened some months ago, they'd actually caught and killed a Cornish hen. Yep, they've got them down here in Latin America too. Kind of sad about that, but dogs do like birds, you know. So then this time, what had they cornered? Well, I tell you, it was the biggest Jesus lizard I'd ever seen. Thing must have been 1.5 feet tall. Now, I'm not afraid of those things. They don't bite, but I don't like touching them with my bare hands either. And this one was feisty. You know how those lizards like to just stand very still and kind of play dead? Well, he did a little of that, but actually jabbed back a bit. Oh, and by the way, on a previous show, I mentioned they call them Jesus lizards, even in Spanish. Largatillas de Jesus, or Largatilla de Cristo. Why? Because with their big webbed feet, they can actually walk, or more precisely, run on water. Now, it's the rainy season down here, and that creature obviously wanted to get into the house where it's dry and cozy. But even more than that, he wanted to get away from those dogs who, at least at this point, hadn't hurt him or killed him yet. But you know how cats and dogs are. They'll capture an animal or a bug, play with it a while, bat it around a bit, carry it around in their teeth, throw it in the air. Some say, you know, that's how Hillary brought up Chelsea. But I digress as usual. Anyway, I grabbed a plastic bag and rescued it. Stuck it over my hand, picked the Jesus lizard up, took him to a safe place, and gave him a free pass. Now, I can tell you, times have changed. Much of the same thing happened to me 25 years ago in Costa Rica. I was confronted with a Jesus lizard. Again, with the Jesus lizard. Maybe it's a sign, huh? Anyway, that little lizard, maybe 10 inches tall, made its way into the foyer of my little beach house. That's when one of the gringa ladies screamed so loud you would have thought it was a T-Rex. Worse yet, one of the gringos fell down as he dove for cover because he thought it was poisonous and was preparing to attack. And in the end, one of the brave gringos came to the rescue of those fair maidens and initiated the death penalty. By the way, it wasn't me. Looking back, it was quite sad, but that is the knee-jerk reaction a lot of newbie gringos have when they first get down here. They see some unusual creature or bug and they get scared, grab something, and squish it. In fact, a few times while in Costa Rica, I had to reprimand some nasty little gringo kids who'd come down with their parents. I caught some kids throwing rocks at monkeys and others feeding wild parrots junk food. And worse yet, I caught one kid feeding a toucan in a cage Trident sugarless gum. Now, that'll plug him up and eventually kill him. Little boys can and will be little jerks, you know. I was once one myself, little boy that is. I'm still a jerk, but most people tolerate me, at least for a while. Anyway, that's not to say little Latin boys don't kill things too. They do, but when they kill them, they usually eat them. By the way, it's a rite of passage for all little Latin boys, middle class and lower middle class anyway, to have a really nice hand-carved, homemade slingshot, often passed down from father to son. Now, unfortunately, you give an American kid a nice slingshot, and the first thing he's going to do? Bust out a few streetlights. And how do I know that? Well, I'm not telling except to say, those were the days. Whereas young Latin boys will use their slingshots to kill squirrels, rabbits, iguanas, pretty much whatever's moving and edible. Yes, the middle and lower middle classes have all tasted iguana, even snake. In fact, I've sat down to dinner with middle-class Latin families where they've had such delights. Needless to say, I'm always glad that there's a dog who'll eat anything under every Latin person's kitchen table. Oh, by the way, you know, if you live on a coast in Latin America, chances are there'll be sea turtles coming into shore once a year or so to lay their eggs. And all the local kids will go down at night with their flashlights and watch the turtles lay their eggs, and they'll dig them up, take them home to the family for dinner, or sell them at the local tienda or on the street themselves. There is a big market in Latin America for turtle eggs. Why? Because they're eggs, and eggs are protein. In fact, you can go to any big fish market or central market during turtle egg season and buy some if you want. However, I wouldn't recommend it because you know what? They're slowly but surely wiping out the species by doing that. Which brings us back to what you can do as a gringo when you get down here to Latin America to help the locals and the environment. Well, a good friend of mine, a long-term expat down here, he's been here I think 18 years now, he has a beach house on the Pacific side and the turtles do come in once or twice a year. And over the years, he tells me the turtles pretty much only come in at night. It's a way to avoid natural predators. I said natural predators. But he says he also sees the little kids out at night with their flashlights waiting for the turtles to come in so they can steal their eggs. So my friend, after watching this revolting development happening for a few seasons, decided to do something about it. He put out the word locally that he will buy turtle eggs. So the kids will dig them up as usual, and instead of eating them or selling them on the road, they'll bring them to his house. He'll buy the eggs, and he'll take them down to a turtle sanctuary, which just happens to be a couple of kilometers away, and hand it back to the biologists and naturalists that run the place, so the kids get paid and the turtles survive. A win-win. So my gringo friend, by hatching that idea, ow. Anyway, He's giving back in a very simple but unique way. So my friend figures over the years he's saved literally hundreds, if not thousands, of little turtles from the death penalty. Good for him. And speaking of the death penalty, down here in Latin America, there's in fact a love-hate relationship going on with that concept. As it turns out, historically, all the countries that had dictators, benign, benevolent, brutal or not, when they were in power, they always had the death penalty. It was legal, used on occasion, and in general was a big deterrent to capital crime. As mentioned, all Latin American countries had dictators at one time. Some Latin countries still do, though in a kinder, gentler, dictator-light sort of way. In other words, people do disappear and end up in the gulags and such, but they don't hang them in public or line them up for firing squads. Not anymore. So basically, we've got some dictators down here with a lighter touch, like Cuba's Castro, Venezuela's Maduro, Nicaragua's Ortega, etc. Now, what you're going to find surprising and maybe a little irritating is that every time there's a strong-armed dictator in office, the crime rate in that country plummets. And what do you think that is? Well, that's because these strong-armed dictator types, when they say they're going to punish somebody for a crime, man, they do it. And they do it fast. No half a dozen appeals or a 10-year wait on death row. When a judge hands down the death penalty in a case, that guy's got about 30 to 60 days and it's over. Now, that's not to say if you've been handed down a stiff sentence or even the death penalty, you couldn't get out of it if you had a lot of dough. You can. This is Latin America, you know. But for the average guy, they know that if you're living under a strong-armed dictator, capital crimes will get punished, and swiftly. Now, the traditional way to get out of a heavy sentence for a narco or a big-time government-convicted criminal is simply to leave the country. In fact, it's common for Latin countries to accept the convicted criminals or fugitives from adjacent Latin countries as long as the big-time criminal brings along his ill-gotten gains. In fact, Panama's harboring a lot of Latin political criminals right now, who've stolen countless millions from their own treasuries. But Panama doesn't care as long as they get part of that dough. So anyway, crime statistically is always quite low when there's a strong-armed dictator. The exception these days being Venezuela. Since the place is in chaos and people are starving, all bets are off. Now, when you talk about Latin America's recent past, that would be the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, there were many dictators and civil wars. Most of them instigated clandestinely by the U.S., but you knew that already, right? Then eventually, as time went on and the civil wars died down and the old strong-arm military colonels and generals retired, got old, or died off, and pretty much throughout Latin America, the public got their wish, somewhat free elections, but they came at a price. Well, take one guess who always stepped in to lend a helping hand. The stinking United Nations and the World Bank, of course. Now, for any of you who've read that book by John Perkins, it's called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Now, there's a book that should be required reading for everyone with a half a brain. Anyway, if you read that book, you know what happened next. So, what's the book all about? It basically tells the true story of how the U.S. government, along with the World Bank and the U.N., hand out gigantic loans to third world countries that they can never repay. The country's political bigwigs then skim enough of that dough to live like royalty forever and use the rest of that borrowed dough to construct huge infrastructure projects, like, for example, hydroelectric dams that only first world connected companies are allowed to bid on. So it's a revolving door of money, corruption, and crime at the highest political levels, sanctioned by the U.S., the U.N., and the World Bank. Then, after some years, when those third world countries can't pay those loans back, the United Nations, the World Bank, and the IMF come in with another round of loans that they can't pay back. You stir and repeat, but this time, the mining, utility, and agricultural land and concessions that were used as collateral for those loans revert back to first world transnational corporations. It's a dirty, stinky game. You should read the book and you'll find out more about it. And yes, it's still going on. So anyway, more recently, when third world people finally got kind of free elections, they were able to kick out most of their candidates that had military backgrounds and vote in more educated, more so-called humanitarian and less corrupt individuals. Yeah, right. Insert laughter here. Now remember, I started this rant by talking about the death penalty. Well, did you know that when the United Nations and the U.S., the World Bank and the IMF come into these countries to offer big financial packages? Well, because of all that human rights stuff these days, one of the many prerequisites for getting that dough is for the country to eliminate the death penalty. So Latin countries have accepted the dough and crime has gone way, way up. Now, here's the irony. 9 out of 10 regular people on the street, when interviewed, will tell you they are for a return to the death penalty. Now, the curveball in all this is that Latin America is 95% Christian, mostly Catholic. And as you might know, Catholic doctrine is absolutely against the death penalty. But oddly enough, many Protestants and evangelical groups are more flexible about the idea. So the Catholics are against capital punishment, and most of Latin America is Catholic, yet 90% of the people on the street are for capital punishment. Doesn't jive, does it? Now, you might be wondering, does Johnny believe in capital punishment? Well, yes and no, and I'm not trying to be evasive here, but I've actually thought out a kind of a solution I've never really heard anybody mention before. Maybe it's original, maybe it's not. But being that, in Latin America anyway, the Catholics far outnumber any other religious group, well, how about this for a compromise? Being that the Catholic Church is the largest landowner in the world and the wealthiest church denomination by far, they ought to kick in on this project. Oh, and by the way, I understand the second largest private landowner in the world is, get this, McDonald's. Anyway, I think if Catholics want countries to eliminate the death penalty, then the Catholic Church, according to biblical principles and charity, should be responsible for financing the lifetime incarceration of a person convicted of murder. That's a win-win. The Catholics win, no capital punishment. The public wins because the guy is locked away, no longer on the streets. And it's someone else's dime, not the government who's footing the bill. Hey, what's not to like about that? So the question is, do I believe in capital punishment? Well, yes, if the alternative is lifelong incarceration that your and my tax dollar has to fund. So if someone else wants to pay for it, fine with me. Lock them up. Otherwise, just pull the trigger on all those irredeemable psychopaths. Now, I really like expat Eddie's solution to that, too. He's always got something to throw into the mix. He says the easiest, fastest, and most economic way to eliminate most of the world's sociopaths and psychopaths is to drop a small nuke on Congress when it's in session. Wait a minute, could that be the economic and social reset button that some people are talking about? Wishful thinking, huh? Well, on that happy note, I'd like to tell you about a new service that's very cool. It really comes in handy if you're coming down to Latin America, starting your Plan B, and especially if you've got to come down for some time and don't know how long you're staying. Now, we all know you can buy a one-way ticket to Latin America. It's probably $100 cheaper than a round trip. A lot of people elect to do that. Especially when their timing isn't precise. When they're coming down on a mission, looking for real estate, looking to get their temporary or permanent residence, whatever. And if you buy a round-trip ticket, you might be forced into using the return ticket or tossing it and having to buy a new one later. So for many people working on their Plan B, their best choice would be a one-way ticket. However, these days, airlines won't let you fly out of your country to another without a return ticket because they don't want you to overstay your visa in the country you're landing in. Yeah, right, like gringos are the ones most likely to be illegal aliens in a foreign country. Talk about ass-backwards logic. So you can't fight it. You have to buy a round-trip ticket these days. Or do you? Well, what if you could rent a return ticket for just 24 hours? Is that even possible? Well, I'd like to give credit to Mark, who's on my early bird list for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. He turned me on to this cool little service called FlyOnward.com. Here's the concept. What you do is you pay them $10, and they'll rent you a return ticket that's good for 24 hours. And when you're checking in at the airport, you hand them the voucher for the return trip, and you're good. Yes, it's in your name and in the airline database. And there's nothing to indicate it's been rented for just 24 or 48 hours. $10 for 24 hours, $20 for 48. So all in all, it should end up saving you $100 at least. So do check it out. It's called FlyOnward.com. That said, let me read a few of the details for you off their website. It starts out, FlyOnward is an exclusive flight ticket rental service. We provide you with international flight tickets and travel itineraries with your name on them to use as proof of your onward travel plans when you travel abroad. Why? Because in many countries, you won't be able to enter as a tourist without proof of onward travel. Put simply, if you have a one-way ticket and no proof of future plans in that country, you can be refused entry. Our service gives you proof of onward travel without the hassle of paying for expensive return airfare up front. You simply rent the ticket for a small fee for 24 or 48 hours. Okay, it's me again. I'm sure you're thinking now, how can they do that? How do they get away with it? Well, they explain it on their website. They say, this website is developed and operated by a digital nomad who has been traveling around the world for years. He has experienced the hassle of onward ticket rules and how you can waste money on tickets that you never actually use. Fly Onward's ticket service is provided by an air travel agency who is legally allowed to purchase refundable tickets and to cancel the ticket purchases automatically after a maximum period of 48 hours. However, it says, you can contact us for an additional quote if you need a ticket that lasts more than 48 hours. Remember, you only have to use that ticket when you check in and get your flight boarding passes just to show them that you've got a return ticket. And finally, it says, yes, these tickets are legitimate. They are booked and paid for by our service. Therefore, you can legally use them as proof of your onward ticket. We don't allow you to book a flight that departs very soon after your arrival, though, which means there is plenty of time for the ticket purchase to be canceled, and you will never need to actually use the ticket. So it's me again, Johnny. You gotta love it, huh? An airline and immigration hack that really works. At least we hope it does. And for only 10 bucks, can't believe it? Well, go to flyonward.com and read about it. Mark, who told me all about this, will be purchasing one of those tickets soon, so we'll get a report from him, won't we, Mark? Okay, we're getting towards the end of the show now. I'd like to report that by overwhelming popular demand, I've sort of been arm-twisted into opening up the registration for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar months early. In fact, in 6 years of doing these things, it's never been like this. People in the know believe things are really going to crack apart after the election, which is why everyone's in a rush to get their own Plan B going. So to get on that early bird list and sign up yourself, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link at the top of the page. This one's going to sell out fast, so be sure to get in while you can. And yes, this time John Galt will be offering his pre- and post-seminar trips too. By the way, I've heard comments from past seminar attendees who said the one thing they regret is that they didn't take an extra 4 days to go on one of those trips. So the object, of course, is to come to the seminar, but also to spend a few more days and get additional boots on the ground. And finally, don't forget to go to the Expat Files YouTube channel. There you can hear the show with all the photos and slides and bells and whistles. It's guaranteed to raise a smile, and if it doesn't, well, then sue me. That said, once again, I have to ask, how's that Plan B coming?
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.